Der D2M Talk. Gespräche zum Wandel der Kommunikation mit Thorsten Ising und Björn Nägelmann. Der D2M Talk. Jeden Dienstag von 15:30 bis 16:15 Uhr.
Ja, hallo, ich darf euch alle ganz herzlich begrüßen hier beim weiteren D2M Talk am Dienstagnachmittag. Mein Name ist Björn Nägelmann von Kongress Media und ich unterhalte mich in der Regel hier zusammen mit dem Thorsten Ising an dieser Stelle jeden Dienstag mit unterschiedlichsten Gästen zum Wandel der Kommunikation. Und heute haben wir mal wieder einen besonderen Tag. Der Thorsten ist nicht da. Wir haben zudem eine internationalen Gast, eine internationale Expertin, und deswegen wechsle ich jetzt ins Englische, weil wir vielleicht auch englische Zuschauer haben. I'd like to welcome all on our live talk event here this afternoon, because we have an English-speaking guest, we're international this afternoon. Short introduction for all the international followers and watchers and listeners on the podcast afterwards. I'm Björn Nägelmann from Kongress Media, and we're doing different events and doing this live event talk every Tuesday afternoon, normally together with Thorsten Ising, who is my co-host, and we have always different guests. And today we have Sama Al-Naib here on the show. We had her already as a keynote speaker on our influencer marketing forum 2 weeks ago, talking with her about the changes in influencer marketing, influencer relation management, influencer. The work with influencers is very much important for a lot of brands, for a lot of companies, and certainly there's a lot of trends, evolutions, changes going on. And that's also we want to reflect this afternoon. So what we took out of our event 2 weeks ago, her ideas, Sama's ideas about the future of influencer marketing, right after the short bumper. There we are. Hello, Sama.
Hello, wie geht's, Björn?
Sehr gut. Nice to have you with me on the show this afternoon. You jumped in on a short notice for one of your colleagues, Jan Warp, who was scheduled normally for today. And then he couldn't come. And you said, he asked you probably. And you said you jumped in. And I'm very honored to have you again here on our channels.
Thanks, Björn. It's always a pleasure to speak to you. So it was a no-brainer for me.
Great. So as I said or introduced you, I didn't really introduce you. You are the head of influencer marketing and deputy managing director of digital innovation Europe and Africa. This is already a long title at BCW Global. So at one of the big networks for public relations communications, BCW. And you're in charge of the influencer marketing and some other stuff.
Right. Yes, that's correct. Yeah, that's correct. So I mean, if anyone isn't familiar with BCW, how we explain what we do is we are an earned plus agency. So we have earned as our heritage, so public relations. But we, of course, layer on top of that all elements across the communications gamut. So that's creative, paid media, social media, influencer, etc. So I think obviously influencer marketing being such a component, a core component of what we do, it was important that we had a kind of a unified strategy in the region and globally to kind of really just make more concrete a methodology and framework of how we approach every influencer marketing brief. And the way that we approach influencer marketing is very much with earned media or earned kind of the philosophy of earned. So what we really try to do is not take for granted that we are paying influencers to do what they want us to do. So instead, it really is, how do we bring them on board this brand brief? Influencers have tons of opportunity to work with brands now. It's such a saturated space, but it becomes more difficult to get the attention of influencers who have so many options now. And I talked a little bit about that in the keynote speech around diversification of income, et cetera, that influencers have at the moment. It just means that it's slightly more difficult for us to get their attention. And so with our earned heritage, it really is about what's the story that we want to sell and how do we get influencers engaged and interested enough to join our cause on behalf of our clients.
So it's all about earned and earned. You need to earn you the attention from somebody on the other side. So it's all about the relation and building the relation and having a win-win situation at the end. But still, stepping one, going one step back at this point, you have been with us at the event 2 weeks ago, our influencer marketing forum. As I said, you did the introduction. You also mention a little bit, what are the key trends? What was your takeaway from our little discussion at the Influencer Marketing Forum?
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're seeing is a bit of an evolution of the influencer marketing space. I mean, just think about it's such a short period of time. It was a newer area back in, say, 2008, when things were just kind of picking up and different agencies were getting involved. And since then, it's just continued to evolve the space around influencer marketing and the whole kind of the economy of influencer marketing, I guess you could say. And what I covered in my talk were two layers of changes. There was the macro changes that we were seeing, and that's everything from the current economic climate to a new generation, Generation Z, which have very different user behaviors online, very different kind of ways of seeking information and how they get influenced. And then I talked a bit about some micro trends, so things around some platform changes, a lot of the backlash that Instagram currently is facing, for example, for making changes on the platform that even creators are not really, it's not resonating with them. They find that it's making their jobs more difficult. It's not evening out the playing field. We talked about new platforms like TikTok and how that's changing the game. So I think there's a lot of evolution. And I think that the important thing is how do brands navigate those changes in the most effective way? How do they keep close to Gen Z as this new upcoming generation? How do they navigate the changes in economic climate, you know, with marketing spend now, you know, starting to become, you know, analyzed and further kind of, you know, questioned? How do we make sure that we have performance first programs that really show the ROI of campaigns? So the talk was really about bringing together all of those changes and really kind of helping brands and marketers navigate all of those changes with some kind of key takeaways around the importance of relationship, for instance, long-term relationship building, why working with creators in a different way might be beneficial to the brand and the creator. So we talked a lot about ambassadorship programs the changes at the moment around brands that are appointing influencers as actual employees of their organization because they believe that they want to get closer to audiences. So it was all about how do we take all those various changes, both macro and micro, and what can we take out in terms of the key learnings that brands can take forward as they evolve their marketing plans.
So just to make some marks, what we don't have to talk about anymore. So influencer and creators are here to stay. Is that right?
That's what we're seeing at the moment. That's correct. Yes. So we're not seeing them go anywhere anytime soon, but we're finding that the definition of creator for us is now broadening into everyone is a creator. And especially with new platforms like TikTok, for instance, who have really democratized the creator space. Anyone can be a creator if you have content strong enough for people who want to engage with.
It's not only more about the meager macro influencers.
That's correct. Yes. So really, what TikTok had done is a very refreshing take on the creator space, which basically for them was, you don't have to have millions of followers to be an influencer. You just need to have content. So they're content led. So as long as you've developed content that is being seen, that's what they value. They don't value the number of followers that you've amassed. So that basically just threw a new element into the mix around really pushing people to be more creative, pushing people to push creative boundaries to create content that was really going to get on people's For You pages or their, you know, the algorithms of discovery. So that's become a really interesting thing and a recent evolution. So to your question, Bjorn, are creators here to stay? Correct. I would say that they are here to stay, but the definition of creators, I think that's been broadened out, and we have a way bigger pool of people to play with nowadays than we used to.
So, but while the macro influencers, it was all about eye views that we would buy in, now it's about what?
Sorry, can you repeat that, Bjorn?
While with them in the area before TikTok and the macro influencers, it was all about buying eye views from the macro interview influencers. The game is now what?
Now it's actual tangible engagements. It's, have people watched the video? Have they engaged with the video? Is it or content in general? I think it's more talking about tangible engagements as opposed to passive metrics that we used to use, like followership or impressions, for instance. So that's kind of what we're seeking at the moment.
So it's all about the uniqueness and creativity of the content?
Yes. And also, I think what we're also seeing is more of a, we're being more specific about the type of influence we're looking for. So whereas before it used to be general influencers that used to be, you know, talking about everything from home finances to fashion to lifestyle to beauty, you know, you kind of go to the same pool of influencers because they had the followers of, you know, 5 million followers, and therefore you think they have license to talk about everything. Whereas now we're really starting to become very specific around, if we're pushing a cleaning product, who has authority to talk about that in a very interesting way that's really going to get us the conversions that we're looking for. So again, when we talk about influence nowadays, we are becoming way more specific about what we mean when it comes to influence. So that's also kind of changing. I talked a little bit, Bjorn, in the keynote around the diversification of influence. So how we have different types of people that are, you know, are creating content, whether it's professors, scientists, you know, different generational diversity. So people who are retirees. So that's really people who are, you know, suffering with disabilities are talking about how they're living their life, you know, going through that. And I think that's kind of really opened the space and really allowed us to become way more diversified about the creators that we're looking to engage.
So, but when you're saying that the scene is now democratized and everybody can be a creator, and then on the other hand, you're talking about specific people that have the authority to talk about something, how can we identify now who has the authority? Before, it was always done by the crunching numbers of followers, and now?
Now it's a blend of things. I think we have to be specific. So I think, you know, agencies now have all kinds of technologies and tools to allow us to really dig deep into an audience that, sorry for the noise.
I cannot hear it.
Oh, okay. Perfect. great. So I was going to say, we have all access to all kinds of tools and technologies that are AI based that allow us to really dig deep into conversations around whether it's, you know, the COVID vaccine or whether it's about other forms of, you know, health topics. And we are able to be very specific about what we're searching for and able to see who are the people that are leading conversations in those areas. And so that just allows us to really be specific about, you know, who we're looking for. And when we're looking for those people, we're not just looking for people who have the follower number, because at the moment that what that's proving is that that's kind of it's becoming an increasingly insignificant metric, the follower number. What we're looking for is really who has actually generated tangible active engagements. So when we talk about meaningful active engagements, it's video views, it's actual commentary. So at BCW, we don't we don't, I mean, this is not to plug us, but we have a framework called TrueFluence, which is a play on the words true influence, where we really dissect what influence means. And what that is, we differentiate between, you know, vanity metrics such as followers and impressions, and we differentiate between even between the subset of what we call meaningful impressions, we rank them. So there are metrics that are more important to us than others. For instance, comments for us is the gold standard. Actual tangible commentary where people have taken the time to type something out that is relevant to the post. Again, there's a lot of people that, you know, put emojis that don't make sense or say something about the person's background or say something that's completely irrelevant to what we're trying to push. We don't really rank those or really, I would say, count them as meaningful impressions. I think it's really starting to become smarter about how we measure influence. What does that mean? It's relevant, positive engagements, and most importantly, commentary. I think that's what we're really looking for.
Okay, so the key indicator, key performance indicator of an influencer creator is the tangible influences,
yes.
Influence that he/she has in his community, in his reach.
So yes, correct.
When you're saying that everybody can be a creator, before in this first area of influencer marketing, we had those macros who were always money driven. So their business was to sell their reach. Is this different now?
Yes, it is. I mean, what we're even looking now is a lot of times influencers get asked about metrics, previous metrics of previous campaigns. Sometimes we ask influencers around what their previous conversion data looked like for a similar campaign, just to kind of be able to assess. So I know I mentioned commentary as like the gold standard of engagements we're looking for, but that of course it depends on the type of campaign we're running, because if we're trying to run a campaign that's all about driving sales or conversions, obviously we would prioritize those metrics. However, those metrics tend to be harder to get, so we don't have access to third-party retail platforms without permission to be able to kind of gather conversion data of influencers. So therefore, we have to rely on influencers to give us that data, unless we've worked with them in the past and we can say, actually, that person generated a lot of conversions around a similar product category.
But still, my key question for me is, are those new influencers those micro or medium-sized influencers who are more on creative contents and more on creating their own influence for a specific topic, are they still keen on money, on corporation monies, on doing business with brands, or do they have different alternative business channels or different ideas, if not monetary ideas, for creating the influence? Because before, in the first era, we had those macro influencers that was clear. Their business was selling their reach to brands.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Has this changed?
At the end of the day, if that's their day-to-day profession, so if they are creating content on the daily, and as a brand, we would like to engage them, they're most likely, you know, relying on financial compensation. So even, I mean, I have to also clarify, when I say we have an earned first approach, I don't mean that we don't pay the creators. Of course, we compensate them financially, but we have to ask them for other things or allow them to be slightly more interested in our brief compared to a competitor's brief, for instance. But to answer your question around, are they purely motivated by money? They are motivated by money, but we have to kind of bring other things into the mix around, like, what else can we give them? Can we give them free access to content? Can we give them free access to product? Can we give them new experiences, etc.? So at the end of the day, especially with the economic climate, yes, money is very important.
Thesis about the creator economy is that those new types of creators have also alternative business channels. So
yes,
they do. Not purely dependent on the corporation to do anything for the brand.
Yes.
So they are more selective. That's hypothesis.
Yes, that's a good point. And that's also something that we covered in the keynote around diversification of income. So a lot of what we're finding at the moment is many creators have different streams of revenue. So they have obviously their YouTube ads, you know, AdSense, they have different forms of getting compensated by brands. So again, like that's creating content or other forms of collaborations. And then they also have direct, you know, fan to influencer compensation models. So for instance, Patreon, a lot of influencers are now creating exclusive content to people who are subscribing to their to them. And it's a donation based exchange. Even Instagram recently launched a whole feature where you can donate to your favorite or subscribe to your favorite influencer, you know, donate what you like. So yes, that is correct. There is a more of a diversification. So, you know, while brands used to be.
With the diversification of the income channels, has the power shifted from the brands towards the influencers and creators?
I would say yes.
In regards to the leveraging the corporation power mechanism, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes and no. Yes, because if you asked me this maybe even 6 months ago or more, I would have said yes. It is moving more from the brands to the creator. And I also, another revenue stream is, again, we're seeing a lot of influencers start their own companies, their own labels, their own lines, working with you know, with their own people. So have their own teams. So yes, I would have said probably 8 months ago, there's a bit of a power dynamic or a power shift. However, again, with the economic climate today, you know, that's becoming difficult. People are slightly becoming more, you know, picky about what they're spending their money on, and therefore I'm sure influencers and creators are at least preempting that change in consumer spend, and therefore are going to seek out brand collaborations more so, or at least be open to them slightly more so. So again, it's one of those things with the evolving nature of you know, of where we are at the moment. Things can change every month, but I would say I would say yes and no to that question, you know, given the economic climate at the moment.
Okay, to summarize our discussion, influencers are here to stay, but we have somehow a different kind of creator. It's more diverse. It's not only the big ones, it's also smaller ones. They are more selective in what they want to do because they have other objectives, not only getting money out of one corporation and doing whatever the brand wants them to do. They're picky on what's the part of the, or what's the content or the creation of the corporation, but because at the end it's all about the content and the, you know, well, the creative that they play out to their community. So making a mark or check on this. Now you said that it's also about influence. It's more about earn, because we need to earn their credibility, we have to earn a credibility that the influencer creative really want to work with us as a brand.
100%. It's, you know, what is the story that we're selling? I think, you know, gone are the days where you can send an influencer a product and tell them to hold it up to the camera with a key message. I think it's really about, you know, what's the story that we're trying to tell? How can you help them be creative? So I think they are motivated by creativity. They are motivated by their audience, and they're motivated by capturing the audience's attention. So we need to be able to work with them in a way that helps them do that. And so, yeah, not taking for granted that you can just send money their way and they will do whatever you want them to do. No, we have to kind of work with, you know, what's the package that we're selling? What's the story that we're trying to tell? And how can that be a mutually beneficial agreement? So we talk a lot in TrueFluence about the triple value exchange, which is, what is the brand getting from that partnership with the influencer, which is usually credibility, authority, reach, etc. What is the influencer getting from that collaboration? So again, is it, you know, credibility by working with a very reputable brand? Is it that we're giving them exclusive access to an event, to a person, to content, to people, to whatever? visibility, whatever that is. And then on the audience side, what are they getting from that exchange? Are they getting informed? Are they getting educated? Are they getting inspired? Are they getting entertained? So I think we really have to dissect that even more so now than we used to, because again, you know, we cannot shortcut this process. We really have to work with them to make sure that what we're doing will get cut through, and we'll capture audiences' attention. That's the end game.
This, bringing it down, this ends up or brings us to a very complex equation, isn't it? So
yes,
it's not just, well, we're doing a campaign and here's a briefing and you're doing a nice content piece around this and we're paying you for this. No, it's an equation of different powers that have to equalize and bring together at the table.
Yeah, I mean, again, I feel like I'm really pushing Truefluence, but I think just to summarize why having a framework is important is because you have a process that accounts for different variables, and you have a philosophy that we carry. So we talk a lot about the art and science of what we do, the art really being the nuanced relationship building, really ensuring we understand creative, we understand what audiences are after these days. It's the kind of soft skill. And also, again, I'm going to mention this again, relationship building is a very human-led experience. You can't really sit behind emails or sit behind technology to do that relationship building element. So that's the art bit. And then the science is everything around data, performance, all the tools and technologies that we use to ensure that we're finding the right people, making sure we're measuring the right, you know, meaningful engagements that we talked about earlier. So that's the science bit of it. But I think it's about bringing those two elements together to ensure that we have, you know, the best campaign. But yeah, I agree. There's no cookie cutter solution. I think anyone that's talking about a cookie cutter solution should send alarm bells, because the space is extremely nuanced and it's really about understanding everything around the social platforms, the economy, what creators are seeking at the moment, how algorithms are changing, how to compensate them. I think it's a myriad of different things that we have to always continue to keep our finger on the pulse about.
But for companies and brands that are coming late to this game, it's very hard to build up now good relations, or even also for the ones who are already in the game, because creators are changing. Because at first you have to build up relations, then you have to find out whether you have a win-win situation for the relation with the influencer, and then you can do a campaign at some point with the people.
Yes, I mean, we talk a lot about, I mean, this doesn't have to be a lengthy process to get your foot in the door in terms of influencer marketing. I always use the metaphor.
But you have to earn the credibility that you can work with some influencer or creator.
Yes. I mean, I always kind of, I think first of all, what we're finding with Gen Z is they're way more experimental. They're not purely motivated by brand heritage like we used to see with millennials and other generations. For them, it's really about the creative potential of the brand. And also they're way more exploratory about the brands that they work with. They actually don't mind working with brands that are not as well known. So I think that's important to bear in mind. But I always kind of use the metaphor around, you know, drawing a parallel to like the relationship world, or that, you know, how we build relationships, friendships, romantic relationships. You almost test and learn. You meet someone new, you kind of see if the chemistry is there. If the chemistry is there, then that's when you build a long-term relationship with them. This isn't
But in this space, it's altruistic. So you don't build up the relationship because actually you have a specific objective to fulfill at the end. And companies always have the objective to, well, sell something, to do some marketing for something. And actually, they're always coming to the point or to the table with the creator and influencer to build up the relationship because of something they want to get out of this. So this
of course
is different,
yeah,
isn't it?
100%. But I think that's kind of what the test and learn process is about. Is about, you know, a lot of times when we talk about long-term relationships, you know, brands are very keen to start that from scratch. So let's approach this influencer and ask this influencer to build a long-term relationship with us. When we kind of counsel them against that, we say, actually, how do you know that there's that person's going to generate the return that we need? So why don't we have a 3-month program, and then we can assess these 5 influencers after the 3 months. And then we can basically, we have a quadrant scale where we cluster influencers based on, you know, high awareness, low cost, low awareness, low cost, you know, et cetera. And where we see like the quadrant that is generating us the highest amount of return for the most efficient, you know, spend, that's where we say those people are worth re-engaging in the future. So I think even when we talk about long-term relationships, we don't mean starting that right now. We mean understanding which influencers are worthy of that long-term relationship, because not everyone will be. So it is kind of a test and learn process. I think it's just about getting in there, getting your foot in the door, and also kind of being able to evolve and be agile with the space, because it changes so often. But most importantly, I think what we always tend to do is ensure that we are engaging whoever we work with, whether that's a new relationship that we're building, or someone that we just have an established 12-month, 36-month relationship with on behalf of a brand, is we find a lot of success with involving key people within that influencer pool early on in the creative process. So instead of us coming to them with a fully formed idea of saying, we want you to do this, and we're going to brief these 20 influencers or 100 influencers with this creative, it's almost kind of bringing those people, most importantly, the people that we have worked with before, to come into those marketing immersion sessions, that we can really, you know, stress test ideas, get their thoughts, have them present something, really kind of get behind, use them as consultants usually. And that really is very, very insightful, a very insightful exercise, because it allows us to really, it challenges our thought process actually, from someone who is closer to the audiences that we would like to reach.
This was also another aspect that we discussed 2 weeks ago, that we should leverage the not only the creativity, but also the performance of these new types of creators in creating content at the end, because they are much better in the content creation process than companies and brands are.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think also it comes down to the briefing process as well. I think what we're finding is that influencers increasingly want less prescriptive briefs. They want to come to us with ideas. I mean, even when we have the creative platform and everything around the creative brief set, usually what we like to do is not be so specific about what the output should look like. We can have an approval point at the end to say, can we see it before it gets posted? And then that way, you know, just making sure we're respecting their time, because we don't want them to reshoot the content. That's more time on our part, but giving them just enough to play with, and then being flexible about what they bring back. But I think at the end of the day, what we are trying to coach clients on is being slightly more relaxed with that, because sometimes, influencers are people. These aren't, you know, paid media platforms where, you know, clients are really used to being very specific about the key message and no spelling mistakes, and the creative needs to be on point, etc. Influencers are imperfect. They will make mistakes, and that should be okay, because that's why we're hiring them. That's why they're being followed by audiences, is because they're humans. They're not, you know, they're not robots or, you know, digital boards. So I think we need to be slightly more relaxed about how we brief them, and also what comes back, and really, you know, respect that process a bit more, just as you would, you know, a journalist, for instance, who would come, you know, we're able to brief a journalist on a specific storyline, but really being able to be receptive to what they come back with around, you know, we really think the narrative in the media space at the moment is going in this direction. Can we weave the story into that? So I think we need to just be slightly more receptive to what they come back with.
But how can the companies or the organizational members of those companies deal with this situation to be more reluctant on the situation on the corporation part, and doing less briefings, giving the freedom to create something out there without maybe a strict guideline?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few things. I think first is more mindset based. So I think they should also be prepared to be on the front line and build relationships directly with influencers to be reassured. And then the second thing is what we always recommend is having an issued preparedness plan. So working with us to ensure that in case things go wrong, you know, in case we've completely missed the mark in terms of the creative, how can we, you know, respond to any audience backlash? And it has happened. And again, this is part of what we talked about in the keynote, is having a almost like a reassurance plan to ensure, you know, we aren't gonna, even if we do end up getting this wrong, audiences don't like what we are proposing, and or the influencer themselves goes completely rogue, and you know, we've been receptive, but it doesn't seem to land well and people misunderstand what we're trying to do. I think just having an issues preparedness plan so the influencer knows what to do, we know what to do, and we know how to respond in a timely way. That's part of the package around influencers, is really just ensuring that we have safety nets in place as well to allow us to take risks.
So looking at your bio, we can see that you're also nearly 10 years in this business, and certainly can evaluate the situation now and compare it with situation in 2015 and 2017. Is it more fun, more easy, more complexes, or what is the difference between maybe the three different times? So 2015, 2014, 2015, 2017, just before the pandemic, 2018, 2017, 18, and now, nowadays. Would you say?
Yeah.
Well, I see differences in this area. So that's why I mentioned this these years, but I would be eager to hear about you, what you're seeing in this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned it. It's way more complex now. There's way more complexity because there are different various changes happening. As I mentioned, there's new platforms that are way more prominent now than they were back in 2015. So you know, TikTok, for instance, that was a real big game changer.
With the complexity, is there less fun or more fun?
For me as an influencer marketing person, I would say it's way more fun because there's way more that we need to understand. It's less linear. It's less, it just allows for, the challenge is basically interesting because it keeps us on our toes. We cannot be complacent in this space. We have to always make sure that we are being challenged on things.
It's more a creative process. It's not anymore just selling something by showing something in a picture or a video.
Also, I mean, what works today might not work tomorrow. So, I mean, that's how fast the space is changing. Is the key learnings that you might take away from a campaign that you ran last month might not work in 3 months' time. And so I think it's just about the being able to be agile and being able to kind of really change. That's the most, I guess, I would say interesting thing that I've seen in this space.
Achieving the project objectives, is it more easier or more difficult?
I think it's slightly more complex. It depends actually on what the project objectives are. I think we're seeing definitely more of a shift towards more lower funnel campaigns. So this is about really driving tangible conversions, really making sure that we're showing bottom line impact. So I think that's where we're seeing that becomes slightly more challenging because we have to really start to get granular about how we're tracking, you know, user movements, how we're tracking those conversions, you know, what we can control versus what we can't control with influencers. So I think that's where it becomes slightly more difficult. It's more interesting because platforms are really changing in this space as well. They have more, you know, e-commerce integrations into the platform that allow us to really be able to kind of track the data. So that's obviously been a definite change since, I would say, 7 years ago, 8 years ago. We're becoming more granular. So in terms of achieving performance objectives, I think it's easier in the sense that platforms are able to give us the data that we didn't used to have. And there are more integrations with technologies that we use, like Creator IQ is the technology that we use. They have way more integrations with affiliate marketing programs and Shopify, et cetera. So that's a really nice integration because it allows us to really see the data of driving those objectives, especially if they're lower funnel. However, you know, achieving that those objectives, even if we're able to access the data, that becomes more difficult because that means, you know, we have to understand consumer behavior. We have to understand what drives a creator. We need to make sure that the content is going to get the cut through. We have to make sure, you know, we work with clients in a way that allows them the reassurance creatively, but still that we're pushing the boundaries to be able to get it seen on the feed. So that becomes slightly more complex. So it's not a straightforward answer to your question, Bjorn, sorry, but I would say,
great.
Yeah, I would say it's kind
great
of
answer.
Complex.
Zama, thank you very much. I mean, 45 minutes, these 45 minutes, and it was so much into this. So thank you very much for being with me and for answering my questions.
Of course. And thank you, Bjorn.
Yeah, we see there's a lot of change and motion in this game, in this influencer game. It's not yet uninteresting. It's more interesting, as you said, and it's more fun, though it's more complex. And we need a lot of professionalism to make it work and be successful with it. I think if our listeners and watchers have listened, followed your answer, there might be some hints and some recommendations that we can follow on. So, well, building up the credibility and earning the attention on the creator side and then doing some very interesting creative content piece together with the creators for their communities. This might be a good way to go. Thank you again for being with me.
Thank you, Bjorn. And thank you for the amazing questions. Thank you. Thank you for the great discussion.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Take care.
Das war der D2M Talk mit Thorsten Ising und Björn Nägelmann. Nächste Woche geht's hier weiter mit spannenden Themen und Gästen. Mehr auf www.shiftmarcom.de, der Plattform zum Wandel in Marketing und Kommunikation.